Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Initech.
No, you're working at Initech because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million.
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world, and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Oh, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke. Don't do
If I had $1 million.
Well, and welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. Andrew on the board. We have a little bit of a rally this morning. S&P futures are up 9. NASDAQ futures up 68. Again, yesterday was one of those days where it looked like we might be going to be down, but no, we rallied on the close. So that's the somewhere between the buy the dip and the mutual fund buying. We that seems to be the mantra like every day now. So got to kind of roll with it. I mean, one of the oldest games in the book is. And the firms who are doing the mutual fund buying know that mutual funds are going to buy on the close. They, of course, run ahead of them. that's as old as the Buttonwood tree, I guess. But do we have Mr. Kevin?
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm doing all right.
Did you hear the news that Russell is back today?
Oh, good.
And he's gonna be on with John for a half hour, and I'm by himself half hour, and he's all excited, and so are we.
Yeah, I agree. I miss Russell. I'm glad he's back.
Our friends in Arizona who listen will of course want me to ask about the dogs, and they will hold off on their protests of whatever. So everything's back together. We're back in the force, shall we say. The force is calm now.
all things are calm in the universe.
Yeah, all things are calm. We have a market that can't. We have institutional. Market up stuff going on, and it may go on for a really long time, Kevin. I mean, we have institutional buying. I mean, when I say institutional, we have people continuing to pour money into 401ks every week, so every day there's money on the desk, and some stuff gets bought, and we have the Fed leaking money in, as we talked about yesterday with Professor Hale. They claim that they're not, but they are, even though we don't get a report till like it's a month old on the money supply. Other people are probably getting it, so they know that... The Fed's putting money in. They decided not to tell us anymore. What do you make of that, Kevin? Would they just say there's no reports anymore for us? Now, you can't tell me the Fed is not generating those reports. Just saying.
They don't want to share bad news, and so much of it is bad news. Basically, they are bugging out on their duty to be transparent. And I love it when, you know, every administration is going to come along. It doesn't matter who they are, and they're going to tell you that they are the most transparent administration of all time. And then, you know, from one to the next, it seems like we get less and less transparent.
Anybody who thinks in this country that the people are in charge, where does that go, Kevin? Where's the extreme? How does it? When's the day when either a third-party candidate work. I don't see how a third-party candidate could ever win. I mean, I don't see how they could even. I mean, structurally, how that could even happen.
Yeah, the political system's not built for that, so it's not going to happen.
I don't know how else you with this current alleged two-party system. Anybody who's important is sponsored is sending checks to both guys, right? They may say they're for the other one guy or the other, but. Your big firms, I mean, it's not like Goldman Sachs is shutting out Trump or shutting out Biden, are they? I mean, or Microsoft or somebody like that.
Well, some of them are, some of them aren't. It depends on the company, and it depends on, you know, what the company's objectives are. But I don't even think that's it. I think what we have happening is, at least this is what people are telling themselves to justify themselves, is... that we have a ton of people who just believe they know what's best for everybody. And so they are going to pursue that agenda vigorously. That's just the way it is. There's nothing, are there evil people who say, I'm just going to manipulate this system in my favor? Yeah, I'm sure there are some of those too. But I really think you have just a whole lot of people who think they know better than you and I do of what are the right things to be doing, and that's what they go ahead and do. They pay no attention. It's as if there is no wisdom in the general populace, and of course that's not true. There is a lot of wisdom among the general populace.
I don't disagree. Some of this stuff, I mean, you know, I'll take a shot at the Republicans first, then I'll come back the other way. I mean, the idea is the biggest proponents of the economic trickle-down theory, which is still there in a lot of people's minds, is they get the money first, and don't worry, they'll spread it around. Well, that's interesting, Kevin, but I'd rather be, you know, whatever, a trickler than a trickle-y, right? I'm sure in their mind they're absolutely correct with that. Who was one of the guys that's he's always on TV and he gets way too much time. He was one of the guys fighting over what was the firm where the one guy was long and the other guy was short? He's one of the guys. Was it Ackerman? He was actually on there one day talking about how he shouldn't have to pay any taxes because he is much more charitable, and what he does with his money is smarter than what the government does with his money. Okay, we're not talking about excessive taxes. We're talking about no taxes.
But that's sort of the classic libertarian thought process, anyway. Is that if you put your and it isn't necessarily as a charitable or philanthropic point of view. It's just saying that the market's is going to allocate funds more wisely than the government can. I think there's a fair amount of truth to that, actually.
Well, except that as a pretty much a free market guy myself, that makes sense. But you're not going to participate in the military stuff. You're not going to participate in roads.
Yeah, I get that. Yeah, and there are things that we should be doing that only government is going to be able to do, and that's fine. But the problem is. The government has decided it's going to take a role in all kinds of things where it A, shouldn't be, and B, it doesn't do it well anyway.
Well, and then Democrats, they want to throw money at a problem, and yet the people in the middle steal all the money, or a lot of it. So that's just as screwed up in my mind as the trickle-down theory.
Well, it is, and that approach is always of the mindset that is... It's not that we should or shouldn't be spending money. It's that things fail because we just didn't spend enough. Give us more.
Yeah. This whole phenomenon here in Chicago, and I know in the show we probably talk a little too much about Chicago, but it's a microcosm. I mean, I'm one of these people who thinks that, you know, everything depends on everything else, and what's going on in some place is going on in some other place. By the way, Kevin, this morning, just as an aside, a new low. On expressway stuff. I'm listening, waiting for Andrew this morning. I'm listening to radio. Dan Ryan is closed because some guy in a Tesla whacks a pedestrian on the Ryan. Now you might ask, in the express lanes, no less. I don't know how the hell somebody would get in the express lanes. Nobody seems to know. However, this is the wrinkle to the story. The Tesla camera shows the guy hitting this pedestrian. The windshield of the Tesla is shattered. So the guy hit the windshield. So we're not talking about somebody who, you know, jumped up in the air like Superman and the car went under him. But guess what the wrinkle is?
Yes.
They can't find the guy.
Oh, so they got the car but not the guy.
No, I mean they got the Tesla. He pulled over.
Oh, they can't find the guy that got hit.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting.
Now, I'm hoping that, like, the car behind... saw the dude, like, laying on the pavement, immediately jumped out, threw him in the back seat, and whisked him over to the Chicago Trauma Center or something. But barring that, where the hell could the guy be? I don't think he was running.
The Tesla, it destroys the evidence.
I mean, I can't imagine him racing off the expressway after getting whacked at, like, 40 miles an hour, could you?
I cannot.
But it's not funny. But how could?
Well,
how
it, it, it is. It's not funny if you're either A, the guy that got hit, or B, you know, family or anybody involved in it. But that doesn't mean it isn't funny.
Well, I hope, you know, I hope that
it's tragic and funny at the same time.
Well, I hope the police would get a call that some good Samaritan already has the guy at the hospital, and somehow they patched him back together. I mean, that would be the ideal ending. But boy, oh boy. I don't know about that. The yeah, I mean, what we're talking about, Kevin, is some of this stuff is just, it's just off the chart. I mean, the teachers union here in Chicago, I think the people that are in charge really don't know finances. They don't get it. I mean, are we back to where Tricky Dick had the right idea, just to have a negative income tax and get rid of all these programs? For the listeners,
yeah. But how much? Bureaucratic power is entrenched in all of those programs.
Oh, a lot. For the listeners that are younger, maybe don't remember this stuff because they had like a real job or something. Two things happened in basically the 60s. Well, after Kennedy got shot, Lyndon Johnson passed the Civil Rights Act. And Lyndon Johnson could have been one of the most despicable human beings that ever walked. And he didn't. You know, I'm still convinced, Kevin, that he was part of that assassination. Because he was about to be indicted. What was the guy named Dickie something something? His the guy who was his bag man.
That'd make a good name for a rock band, Dickie something something.
Yeah, but he was about to be indicted right before the assassination. Anyway, not gonna go into that. But he managed to pass the Civil Rights Act, which was amazing for somebody from Texas. And then he also passed this massive war on poverty, right? All these programs to help people that were poor, and the only one I think is still with us is Head Start. Isn't every other one went by the wayside?
Well, or has gotten folded into something else.
Yeah, but I think the only real initiative that passed the test of time was Head Start. There was all these programs, and the talk at the time from some of the conservative people was, hey, if you just would have divided the amount of money that we're spending by the amount of poor people and sent them a check, we wouldn't have had any poor people. You know, and I'm sure it was probably a yuck criticism at the time, but it bears some truth. So then years later, Tricky Dick Nixon comes out with a plan. It never went anywhere, but it was actually very well written. For some reason, where the hell was I? But I had actually done a report on it. It was in some school. When was Nixon? We were in college, right?
Yeah, Nixon was his second election was 72. So there you have it.
Yeah, so he was there pretty much. No, it wasn't.
Yeah, 68 and 72.
I seem to remember voting for Ford when I was in college. Maybe
76 was Ford.
Okay, then I must have voted for. I didn't vote for Tricky Dick. It must have been Humphrey. Anyway, the. No, who did he run against in 72, Nixon? I forgot.
Was that the guy from the senator from Minnesota?
Oh, what's her name's dad? Keith Van Horn's wife.
That's definitive, Tom. What's her name's dad?
I know. Eleanor Mondale. Walter Mondale.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so.
And she was Let's say she had a zest for living, as a judge would say. The story was she was in the. Now, if you ever get invited to the White House, evidently in the downstairs in the White House they have like four or five of the most high end pool tables ever made, right? Well, evidently one day Clinton was doing the nasty with Eleanor Mondale on one of the pool tables. At the same time, Hillary was looking for him, and Monica was trying to get in the gate, and they wouldn't let her in the gate. So the Secret Service had a real issue on her. Anyway, Nixon comes up with this plan, and it was actually very well thought out. It was designed to never make it a positive thing for you to sit on the sofa drinking a beer, because everything you made. If you didn't do anything, if you just sent in your income tax and said, I sat on my ass, just like our intro says, We're going to send you a check for like $2,500. No questions asked. Here, don't bug anybody. There's no programs. Here you go. Buy the beer if you want, but that's it. That's all you're getting. But if you went out and made like $500, you got to keep most of it. I mean, you still got it was a.
Yeah, the idea yeah. was that if you because if you went to work and took a low wage job to get yourself into the job market, that you could take a net income reduction, or certainly would carve into what you were making. So let's just say you took a minimum wage job, and at the time whatever it was, but we could even use today's number. Say it's 7.25, 7.50, whatever. Say you take a $10 an hour job right now. If you were getting, if that knocked you off of the public aid rolls, then in effect you might have been actually working to improve, the improvement in your income would work out to about $3 an hour or something like that when you work.
Yeah, but you never lost money by going to work.
You never lost money by going to work, but you were working for a pittance. That would require very much of a long-term view of the value of taking that job that doesn't really exist. It doesn't exist in a lot of people anyway, but it really is a problem when you're talking about people who have been living on a subsistence level, and if you're not going to take a long-term view when all you really want to know is, where am I going to get my next meal?
Right. But I'm not saying...
Will I be able to feed my kids and so on? So, those become the issues, and that's what the negative income tax was intended to defeat.
Well, and it also stopped the bureaucracy.
Well, we can't have that.
Right. So I'm saying, but either one, has its moral hazard and has its issues. But, I mean, in a city here, like I say, I have one spot where I drive by twice a day, and on weekends where there's a group of the migrants that are there. It's right across from the salt shed. And right now I'm seeing a real lot of them heading for the bus in the morning, so I think there must be some jobs people have. But they talk about this millions and millions of dollars for these people. And yet all I see are people pulling up in like regular cars with their cases of water, donating them, and cases of pop and stuff. I don't see anybody drinking over there. I don't see anybody smoking dope. And so I'm not saying everybody's perfect at all, and this is a very small group, so I'm not beginning to say, everybody...
You're not going to see anybody drinking or smoking dope, because the people who want to go to work aren't the ones who are drinking and smoking dope.
Right, but I'm saying I don't know where the city, if you and I did an audit of where exactly these millions and millions of dollars went, it doesn't look to me like it's going directly to these people.
I mean, it's going through different kinds of non-government organizations that have however much overhead they have just before any benefit accrues to the people who are supposed to get benefits from it.
Yeah, and that's been the Democratic Party mantra for a while, and the Republican Party mantra, maybe more so then than now, is just pour money into the rich people's coffers, and oh, by the way, they'll spend it down the line, and it's called trickle down economics. And
oh yeah, but trickle down, you got to remember, Tom, that was a characterization of Reagan's policy that it wasn't necessarily fair. Certainly wasn't the the stated intention of any of those policies. But it was, if you want to discredit it, give it a catchy name like trickle down and talk about and just give it a pejorative and do it.
Well, so, but I mean, we have.
So I would really rather hear you talk about whether it is saying that if you invest in businesses, will that accrue to people who need better jobs, need higher wages, the growth in the business climate is going to benefit the people who actually get the jobs out of it. You can argue whether that's true or not, and I'm fine with that. We can have all kinds of arguments about the effectiveness of that, but I think to lay a pejorative like trickle down.
Well, I mean, what do you think?
Is really just a way to shut down any discussion of the value of it.
What?
And so I'm not fond of that.
Well, okay, but I mean, the last tax cut we dropped right after the Supreme Court said that corporations are people, essentially, and you can't stop them from contributing at any level almost to these campaigns. Right, so the next day, or not the next day, but very soon thereafter, we drop the corporate income tax from 35 to 21 when you and I are paying 35. Right, so this is, in somebody's mind, pouring money into corporations is helping all of us. Okay, now what do you call that? I mean, I won't use the term trickle down, but it's some sort of a benefiting a group. It supposedly is going to benefit everybody. It's no different than Biden handing out, you know, contracts for 5G, saying that somehow or another that's going to benefit everybody. Well, I don't buy that either. It's not like I'm on one side or the other here, Kevin.
I understand, but I would rather have the conversation laid out just the way you did than to just dismissively call it trickle down.
Well, I mean, because
that's really what's happening.
But I've heard a lot. I unfortunately, for my clients, I have to listen to this stuff all day long, and a lot of the people there that have a lot of money are absolutely convinced that they should pay less taxes because they do such good work with it that everybody benefits. I don't need them to do that. Just pay your fair share and do what you want to do. I mean, I'm not looking to you to be the philanthropist for other people. Just saying. I mean,
what did Reagan accurately say? What's the best welfare program going?
Well, it's a job.
Yeah.
Well, and you know, then I'm saying everything that we talk about has been tried by somebody. I mean, Reagan had the huge tax decrease, and nobody remembers, not nobody, but very few people remember that there was a big increase a year later because they couldn't believe what it did to the federal. I don't know if the people in the Congressional Budget Office were coerced into saying that this was going to be revenue neutral or something, just like Trump's tax. First of all, Kevin, I love taxes going down. I mean, don't get me wrong, but I think somewhere along the line you have to make somewhat of an attempt to match things up. I mean, where would you match up Carl's issue with? I mean, he's gone through the budget, and the budget basically says that the thing that we're gagging on is our medical expenses, right? But then somebody will write an article saying this new drug that costs $1,000 that Medicare and Medicaid are paying for will actually cost $5 to make. And nobody does anything about it. And also, we don't raise the Medicare. Not that I want them to do this, you know. We don't raise the Medicare thing either. So, how do you have a big chunk of the governmental budget that's only being covered 40% by taxes? I mean, someplace, somewhere, one side or the other has got to say, "Wait a minute, we got to close this gap somehow." And yet, neither happens. I mean, it just wanders along. I don't know, Kevin.
So, if you want to tell me that our policies are inconsistent and we really suck at economics, I'll go with that.
But somehow we can't. The big corporations are sacred, and I understand why. I mean, if you and I got elected tomorrow, boy, that would be the Bickersons in the White House. But still, we do a good job. I don't know, Kevin. I'd say, hey, Kevin, your job to go after Pfizer and these other guys, and you'd say, no, that's more like your job. How about we flip? You know, how about we flip a coin for that one? I mean, nobody wants to do it. They're too powerful.
Can I have protection too? I understand that. I know. I mean, it's where are we now? So how do we get out of this mess is a completely different question. And you know, really, anything that's got to be a radical change needs a glide path. So that's what needs to happen. But you know, is it going to happen? No.
Well, you know, Kevin, my wildest fear, this is, please tell me I'm crazy. My wildest fear,
I know, reason.
And when you look at history and you look at places that are, you know, I mean, Germany in the 20s and 30s, I don't know if you could even walk down the block with all the gangs that are doing all kinds of stuff and all the different political parties that really were nothing but gangs. And the same thing was in chaos was reigning in Italy. Chaos was reigning really in Russia, but clearly in China after the war. all of a sudden you end up with somebody who says, I'm going to bring law and order, it's going to be safe to walk down the street, and you end up with some lunatic. And I'm not saying from the right or the left, but you end up with a lunatic, you know, Hitler or Mussolini or somebody. And I'm wondering how far away we are from that here. I mean, in Chicago, if somebody jumped up one of these days, maybe not next election, but someday, and said, hey, look, I don't care what it takes, I don't care what, you know, if people are upset being stopped with machine guns in their car, I'm going to make it safe for your kid to walk down the block. I'm not so sure that we're not that far away from that, Kevin. I mean, people are getting tired of people getting killed and mugged. I mean, on a federal level, I mean, somebody might say, you know what, and if that person, if you really want to do stuff, and I sure as hell wouldn't want to be the guy, if you really want to do stuff, we're talking about whole boards being taken out in handcuffs in the first 3 weeks of that person's term. I mean, it's that bad, I think. And yet, I don't want to do it. I don't think you do either. Yet clearly, there's a problem here. Sam.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not arguing with you on that.
No, you're supposed to. This is where just the one time I want you to tell me I'm nuts.
You are, but that's not for different reasons.
All right.
So if you feel better?
Well, I'm saying there's gonna be a pushback on this someplace. And to a certain extent, Trump is part of the pushback. People think he's gonna stop this crap. I don't think he will. I think he's an F.
I don't know if he will either, but here's the thing. Is if you think Trump is crazy, and obviously a lot of people did in the last round of the election, a lot of people said, you know, that he's just too much, I can't vote for him. But now, is if you look at recent years, whether it is, you know, bigger policies like, you know, immigration, like the additional spending above and beyond what we were already doing, we can go down that list, or whether you start to look at all the social things that are going on, you know, whether it could be, for example, the drag queen story hours and the agenda for trans, the trans agenda, and the interest in convincing kids not only are they of a different gender, but being willing to actually do the surgeries at a very young age. When you start piling on all that kind of stuff, and I could probably give you a list that goes a dozen items long, and all of a sudden, to normal people, Trump looks no crazier than the rest of them, than the opposition.
What?
And then, you know, if you're saying, well, yeah, but he's not a good guy. Well, you know, now we're seeing, you know, the opposition. All the, you know, the treachery they've done, you know, the Russia hoax, you start going down that list, the willingness to prosecute, what they're willing to prosecute Trump on documents, but not Biden on documents, that when you start going all that, they don't have, they're not on the side of virtue either. So what they've done is, if people wanted Donald Trump to go away, then really what would have done that would have been a sense of normalcy coming out
of without a doubt. I agree with you
there. Result of the last elections. And instead, we just got nuttier. By getting nuttier, that's what makes Donald Trump
popular. Well, the part that I have, you know, an issue with is no conversation. If you're talking about how crummy Biden is, somebody's going to say, well, Trump's worse. You talk about how crummy Trump is, they say Biden's worse. That's really not the conversation that the U.S. of A. should have any time, any place. I mean, you can say, okay, Wilson, in his term, okay, his wife covered for him because, what, the guy had a stroke and couldn't do anything in the last 2.5 years, 3. You can go back and say, well, how bad did he really screw up? That's not the question. Somebody else should have been there. Right? I mean, duh. I mean, maybe the wife didn't do that bad of a job, but it's not the point. I mean,
and isn't that what we're doing now
with
the president, who can't possibly, you know, in no way indicates that he is capable of being in charge on anything more than an hour here.
Well, okay, but what I'm saying is we're doing it again. I mean,
doing it again.
But one of our guys, we know what I'm talking about, our psychologist friend, said he's been a psychologist for 40 years. He goes, the man has absolute, if he was in his office, he'd be diagnosed as a total every kind of mental illness there is. He's a pathological liar. He's this, that, the other thing. I mean, he goes, the man has no more. He shouldn't be running a hot dog stand, let alone giving him the presidency. Now that, yes, could Biden be worse? I suppose.
Well, but, yeah, because he's also a pathological liar. He tells, you know, he tells these old stories of, you know, just for no reasonable purpose. He's constantly making up, all kinds of stories about his past. I was a civil rights worker. There's no evidence of that. He goes on and on, and there's a long list of those. So yeah, you want to talk. So now when you start saying, well, okay, Trump's a pathological liar,
that's just part of it.
Aren't you looking and saying, yeah, I know, but that doesn't seem so crazy. On a comparative basis,
Okay, but we have a country,
We need better.
We need better on both. I'm saying we have places where, in school. I mean, at one point we've had professors on the thing and said, they were in college, they would never even date. The rules are so incredible about, did this person ask somebody to kiss them? I mean, and yet we're going to elect a guy who's a total sleazebag when it comes to women, and always has been. And yet the whole rest of the country is going totally the opposite direction. You're not supposed to touch anybody. I mean, I'm not saying what's right or wrong. I mean, but the idea is I guess my question is, Kevin, what is wrong with the system that these are our two choices? How do we get here?
Well, start by considering the alternatives.
Is it because?
Because who do you look at in either party and say, that's the guy? That's the guy who should be leading, or the woman. I don't care. Woman, guy, it doesn't matter to me. But that's who should be leading us.
Well, I guess where I'm trying to go with this, and I'm sorry I'm kind of leading you down this road, but who decides who gets to run? And when I say, you could say there's primaries and all that kind of crap, that's BS, because they're so anxious for you to win some half-assed primary in Iowa and declare you the winner, somebody is, that it's crazy. It may be one or two more. But when he had the mayor's thing, when what's his name, the Ram father said he wasn't running, and all of a sudden Tom Dart, who's been a pretty well-respected sheriff for a long time and been a good guy, I mean, I do him a little bit. We're not saying he's, God or anything, but he goes to Washington. I don't know the full story, Kevin, but he goes to Washington to try and figure out if he has any, quote, support. He comes back and declares he's not running. Who the hell told him not to run? Who are these people? I think a lot of good people might want to run for some of these spots, and somehow they're just... I mean, I'm not talking about anybody can run for, a rep, I think, type of thing. Because there's 400 and some of them, and I don't think anybody really cares for every freshman rep is the same as another. I mean, unless you're there a while, you don't get to do anything anyway. But who are these alleged power brokers that somehow get us, that if somebody we all thought was a good guy and knew what he was doing, tried to run as a third party, this state goes, oh, no, you need this, you need that. The state goes, oh, no. How is it that the states who are supposedly in charge of these elections, it's like they're owned by these parties? I mean, you can't move forward at all. And I mean, if you lose one primary or two, the press is all, oh, geez, why doesn't Kevin O'Neill quit? What's the matter? All he's doing is muddying the waters now. Give Trump the way in, or give Biden the way in. What's he still doing there in the third primary, causing everybody to be pissed off? Well, Kevin, that's not a democracy. The press should be saying, get more people in there, right?
Well, yeah. How many people magically dropped out of the race in 2020, right before the South Carolina primary?
Yeah,
clear the way for Biden. But that was as much because they were afraid Bernie Sanders would win, and they knew.
How much worse off could we be?
Well, that's not the question, though. Why did they not want Sanders? And that's because they felt that a socialist would not be Trump. So they had to do something about that. So that was really what was behind it more than anything else. But yeah, I knew somebody who was working on behalf of Buttigieg. He got a promise of a cabinet position. To be able to drop out. So, you know, why not? That was probably the best he could have hoped
for. But I guess my still the same question. Who is making these deals? Who decides who's the anointed one?
It's a good question. Remember that video, you know, Carrie Lake recorded a conversation with someone who was trying to convince her to drop out?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I remember little bits and pieces of it. I don't.
Of this, yeah, and, you know, doing everything he could on the call to avoid making a specific promise of a bribe or anything like that, but really, you know, kept referring to the people with power, the people with power. So, they weren't identified, but, you know, to Lake's credit, she said, nope, you ain't buying me out of this one. Will she win? Don't know. Will she survive if she wins? Don't know. You know.
I mean, I just wonder what. I mean, this is the amount of, and then the thing I keep falling back on, Kevin, and I probably shouldn't, but it's all about the Benjamins. I mean, the people who somebody somewhere. I mean, two things happened. One is our mayor is running around trying to get rid of the rest of the COVID money. Now, he knows he's going to have a deficit next year because there's no more federal money for COVID. Instead of keeping it, he's finding places to put, you know, trying to find supporters to give this money to. And now, the Biden administration, last week, they had I don't know which bill was passed with a gazillion dollars in it. They gave how many billion to the chip manufacturers, the four big ones, Intel and them, was like, how many billion dollars when they had $4 or $5 billion left that they were giving all these small firms? I mean, who decides? I mean, I think when people look at the politics, you can't. I mean, I don't know. I think it's hard not to, Kevin, but you can't look at the. I won't say somewhat the. Everybody who these people are, they want Kevin O'Neill and Tom Howe to be arguing about some of the race and gender stuff or some of the specific tax issues. They want us arguing about that. Meanwhile, the money game is so much bigger, and they look at us like a couple of you know, the snipes are grousing, as the Irish would say. We're not even part of the picture. It's somebody who's getting this $300 million check from some firm because he supported somebody, or they think he's going to support. That's the world. It's totally incomprehensible from just about everybody, including me. And it's pretty scary. Just saying.
Well, yeah. So, you know, onward we go.
Yeah. And the numbers are so big that, I mean, I've been in finance all my life, and I've managed money for a lot of people, a lot of dough. I still couldn't figure out. I couldn't tell you what $1 trillion looks like. I mean, these numbers are absolutely astronomical. We have an economy where somebody will pay $5 billion for a ball team that doesn't even make any money, and you sit there and go, wait a minute, what is going on here? You know, with the inflation numbers, you know, the inflation bigger than even the inflation is higher than some people can borrow money from, and other people can't come close to doing that. I have to believe, Kevin, in all the our whole history of splitting classes apart, nothing has been more dramatic than rich people being able to borrow at 2% and poor people at 24%. Over a period of 2 decades or 3 decades now. I mean, I don't even know if Milton Friedman was alive, you could give him that job, he could even come up with what damage that has done. I know it's astronomical. I don't have anywhere near the talent or the staff to try and figure it out. But Kevin, guys like you and us, or even some of my wealthier clients, they're never going to be able to buy a ball team. I mean, we're talking about me trying to get somebody from, you know, $2 million account. Hopefully next year it'll be, you know, $2 million and 10% more than that, or 8% more than that, or something. Or if it goes down, I protect them, and everybody else loses 40, and we only lose 10 or something. I mean, that guy or lady sure as hell is not going to be buying the Bulls anytime soon. I mean, we're talking about whole different classes of people here of the likes that we've never seen in this country. Maybe late 20s it was like that, but not ever since. I mean, it's scary if you look at it. The more you look, the more scared you get, I think. I mean, not to be a doggy downer, but I mean, it's...
Well, I think it's just the less optimistic I get. How's that for... And by nature, I'm a pretty optimistic person. And I'm not optimistic. I'm not optimistic of where we're going and how well that's going to work for us. So, what can I say?
Well, I mean, you may, if you decide to have kids again, you could possibly.
Yeah, sure thing.
I mean, you could possibly have a kid that could be a senator or something. I guarantee you're not going to have a kid that's going to own the White Sox. It's a whole different. It's our new nobility. These people in these firms. Now, here's a guy today talking about how Ron Barron, whoever the hell he is, big Tesla shareholder, supports Elon Musk's $56 billion pay package. Now, why would anybody do that if they're not getting something from it? I mean, why would anybody? I don't know. I mean, $56 billion is kind of a lot of money, especially if the stock is nothing but go straight down for the last year and a half. I mean, what? Does anybody who's voting for that even know what $56 billion even looks like?
Sometimes the numbers get so huge that it's incomprehensible. You know, we might balk at a billion, but not 56.
Yeah. I mean, the thing this week is he's got all these things from NVIDIA in order, and now he's directing them not to go to Tesla but to go to X, which is interesting. So he's putting the stuff in Tesla on hold for the other places to get them first.
Well, he should, because people aren't buying electric EVs at the rate that everybody thought they would. So,
and you got people.
It's probably a smart allocation of funds in terms of his business.
Yeah. But so what? We just talked a little bit this weekend. The NCAA made it permanent that anybody can transfer through the portal, right?
Yeah,
you can transfer whatever you want. And my question to you is, if you know, you and I ran, pick a school. I know somebody who knows somebody going to Miami of Ohio. Pick a school. Pick Miami of Ohio. Pick Purdue. Pick whatever it is. What if the athletic department there were to say, okay, fine, you can transfer wherever you want, but this is now a 1-year renewable thing, and we mean it. And oh, by the way, if you transfer out before your sophomore, before your junior year, you always have the money back. I mean, what's illegal about that contract?
Well, they'll have a hard time getting half of the money back because they've called in a scholarship, and they would have to do that anytime anybody, even on an academic scholarship, would decide to transfer to another school. So they're probably not doing that. But you know, could they? Could as part of an NIL agreement, could they have a clawback if they don't complete, you know, with the third party? Yeah. Are the schools allowed to collaborate with these third party NIL collectives? No. Do they do it anyway? Yes. So you could envision something like that happening, getting some kind of clawback or some kind of withholding of the NIL, where you make it a really sweet deal for them to be there, but you're walking away from the sweet deal, what's been accrued to you, that's not going to pay out until later. So yeah, there's probably ways that people are going to figure out to start limiting the movement, because it's, you know, this annual free agency is driving the coaches nuts, and that's where the power is in the NCAA. So you know, they'll come up with something that curbs it.
Well, what in and I keep using the example, which is, you know, just one that I know of, the teams that are the minor league baseball teams that aren't attached, Schaumburg Flyers, the guys down in Crestwood, they routinely hold tryouts and recruit people and give them the coaching that you need to be a ball player, and some guys there all of a sudden are really good, and they get signed by major league teams. Now, I would think economically that the major league team has to, quote, buy that contract. You have to give.
Yeah, you have to have a contract in place. So, you know, that's part one, is you have to have a contract. But you can't have a contract with somebody who's not an employee. So until the college athletes are employees of the school, there's not going to be a contract.
But there are expenses. I have to believe it's 25 to 50 grand a kid to recruit him by the time he's. God help you if you fly commercial, you got to go out there on a private jet, right? What I'm saying is, if some schools, and I think some are already there, not there, but pretty close, hey, we're never gonna get another high school kid as long as we live. Why do we want to do that? I don't want to sit in anybody else's living room telling the parents how good their kid is. Screw that.
But those tend to be, at this point, that's happening, and that tends to be a rung below the power conferences.
All right, but it will get better.
In fact, they're totally willing to pick up the scraps from the guys who don't work out at the power conferences.
Okay, but what I'm saying is it's somewhere along the line. Say Notre Dame, instead of recruiting 30 high school players a year or 25, whatever it is, decides we're just going to grab 10. And every year we're going to grab three people out of Miami, Ohio, three people out of Toledo, three people out of someplace, but all of a sudden grew and nobody thought they were going to grow, and now they're pretty good and we're going to go grab them. Well, at some point, the Miami, Ohio's, the Toledo's of the world, the Northern Illinois's of the world, are going to say, look, we spent all this money recruiting this guy. We've trained him for 2 years. We've given him tuition for 2 years. You want him, you owe us $300,000 or something. I mean, I don't see how that doesn't happen, do you?
Well, you're going to have a legal construct for it to happen. So, it's not going to start happening without some kind of significant change.
Well, I mean, the kids think that they can leave for free. Regardless, and you're saying now, if it was only tuition, you'd say, well, gee, they didn't pay him very much. But now it's not. I don't think anybody's just tuition anymore, are they, in football?
Well, you get it from the school. You get a small stipend.
Right, but I'm saying.
Yeah, and then you get whatever the NIL collective gets you.
But are we going to do this legally, or are we going to find a bunch of kids with broken legs? Hey, I gave you $40,000 a year.
Probably a few broken legs will spur us to do it legally.
Yeah, I mean, I gave you $100,000 a year to be the third string halfback at Notre Dame. And oh, by the way, after your sophomore year, somebody else wants you and you're gone. Well, I want my money back. I mean, whoever somebody is saying, well, what the hell? I mean, what if Hartman would have had 2 years of eligibility with his Under Armour contract, and at the end of one, he said, I'm taking a portal to Nike school. Are they going to have to pay him? Are they going to want the first year back? I mean, when money starts flying around like this, Kevin, that's what contract law is all about, right?
Yeah. Well, and this all happened, under the table beforehand. Maybe not in the same dollar amounts necessarily, but this was all happening anyway. And if you reneged on a deal, you could get your legs broken. In fact, when they were doing it against the rules, you were probably more likely to get injured than you would now.
Yeah, well, I guess. Well, we have lots to talk about, Kevin. This keeps evolving, doesn't it? Anyway, S&P futures up 17, NASDAQ futures up 109. Be right back, Professor Russell Rhodes.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of HomeSource Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
What it is. Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Andrew on the board. SP Futures up 1750. NASDAQ Futures up 112. Is what we should be doing every day. We should be making 1% a day. That's our gig here. We have a couple of stocks that had earnings. We had CrowdStrike is up 34.75. Straddle was 38, so it didn't like double a straddle like they have been doing. Do we have the professor Russell back from?
I'm here.
How are you, bud?
I'm here.
I'm so happy.
I'm here to give you puppy updates and everything else about life. So there's a new one.
You have a new pooch?
Yeah, we'll talk about that later on.
By the way, were your ears burning last week?
I was always.
We're talking on the show. Absolutely. Audrey's one of her best friends and her doctor, and by the way, my doctor. Not that that makes any difference. Has a pooch that is going blind. And I said, well, I know a guy who takes care of a dog that's blind, and if you're careful and not, you know, don't move the furniture around and stuff, they can adapt, probably not as well as a cat, but somehow or another they'll sort of adapt. It's not ideal, but it's not, you know.
Well, we were the backup. We were the weekend hosts for that dog. Because the family's their son played football at Minnesota.
That's right.
So they would go all the games, and we would take care of Ava. But we've got another a temporary one named, and we did not do this. These were the names that these dogs had before they got here. We have Mocha, who's been our rescue, who was only supposed to last 6 months, who's over 2 years, been with us for over 2 years now, so she's permanent. And we got a temporary one who is named Latte. Yes, we have Mocha and Latte.
Latte, oh god,
I know.
But I'm gonna take the over on Latte. Is yours forever?
Oh, Latte. Well, Latte's a temporary visitor. We're fostering her because she's got to have a couple of. She's got to get better. She was abandoned in the. Somebody abandoned her in the middle of McHenry County. Which, what the heck is wrong with people?
Two-year-old
French bulldog puppy, and somebody just threw him out in the middle of nowhere because and she's recovering from a few health issues that she had.
Oh, God, yeah, I would imagine.
But when she's ready to be put up for adoption, she's going to make a family with little kids very happy.
Well, Audrey and I...
She's a good dog like that.
I didn't tell you, but we were heading out. Of course, Audrey's got to get someplace way the hell down in the middle of nowhere to buy plants, right? So we're heading down there, and we're in some you know, I don't know the way south side that much. So we're driving through this area, and it's like all a kind of forest preserve or just fields. And sure enough, there's this skinny. She goes, "Hey, look at the isn't that a coyote? Oh, God, that's a dog." And the poor guy was skinny as could be. You could see his ribs from 100 yards away. And of course, we stopped, and she tried to, but he took off. He was a half a mile away, and I was ready to have him in the back seat. I mean. Mm-hmm. I don't know what I would have done with him, but I'm sure we wasn't going to give him away. I'd have got a Malfie somehow. You know, I'd had somebody come over and watch him during the day or something, or hit up on one of my tenants. But yeah, we almost had another pooch. It's really, somebody must have dumped that poor guy out there. He looked like he was.
It's just terrible.
Yeah, I mean,
why would you do something like that? They're all kind of, there's a right way and a wrong way to do things.
Well, people do that with kids, for God's sake. I mean, you know, I guess if you can do it with kids, you don't. But hey, I've missed your. Sage advice and your knowledge. I mean, Kevin and I were just talking about what the economic policies, in my opinion anyway, I'm not trying to tie you into that, in the last 20 years in terms of bifurcated borrowing rates between regular people and the, shall we say, the blessed people have caused probably the single biggest split in asset values and in wealth in this country's history, other than maybe 1925 to 29.
And that didn't end well, did it?
No.
I always listen to you guys before I'm on, and I heard all of that, and it did not end well at all. But the solution to it is not to make those guys poorer. You know, I always hate when you guys didn't say that, but I think there are a lot of people that say that. Why does Elon Musk need all that money? Give me some of that money. Well, Elon Musk has done things to acquire that money. I'm not saying that he has earned $56 billion. Nobody is worth $1 billion a week. You know, I think that's what they're trying to hold back from him from last year or something along those. But as a professor,
nobody's
worth that.
But on the other side of it is,
I have a godson who works for a SpaceX contractor. He did his internship in college with SpaceX. In fact, he did a whole full school year working for SpaceX and got credit for it. And that opportunity would not exist if it were not for Elon Musk. And you have to keep that in mind. I've taken this side of this before when you talk about the corporate tax card. The companies that get put together, in exchange for people's labor, take care of them, whereas the government will take care of you for existing. There is something to allowing these people to have some wealth when they create something that, a product or a service that people desire, but also, something that creates other opportunities for other people, either through, complementary businesses or, employment opportunities.
Well, I'm never going to degrade the fact that Elon Musk thinks out of the box and has done stuff that other people have not been able to do, and I never would once say the dude deserves minimum wage.
Did you ever in your lifetime? And I one of my earliest memories was the last moon launch. My parents actually, I saw that thing take off. I don't really remember it, but I remember them startling me awake as it was taking off because apparently I was asleep. But I did see that in person. And you've been around for a lot of the early space stuff as well. Did you ever think in your lifetime we'd have private companies that might send people to the moon?
I knew a real.
It's just a huge.
I knew a real lot of it was sourced out.
Yeah.
Who are the guys? NASA. What do they call them? NASA. I knew NASA didn't build the rocket.
They outsourced an awful lot.
It's not a huge stretch as time went on for those people who they're making the rocket anyway, just fly it themselves, I suppose.
Yeah, but we're talking about doing the whole process opposed to having tons of contract and multiple contracts.
Well, how many parts
back in the day?
How many parts do you think?
I've got a cousin that has his own fabrication plant down in North Alabama in Huntsville. That's what he's done his whole career. He worked for NASA and now he builds parts for NASA. And his three sons didn't even go to college, but I'll bet you they are better than many engineers that went to places like Berkeley and MIT.
Well, when you say they didn't go to college, doesn't mean they don't have any training. They could have gone to all kinds.
They got a ton of training. They're probably some of the best. I shouldn't even say probably. I know, because I've visited their plant, and they've expanded into IndyCar parts, so they could go to races. That's smart too. But the wealth thing that we've got going on is just absolutely ridiculous. But what makes it worse is highlighting it in a negative manner to get somebody to vote for you, because then that creates the resentment and creates the divisions that we have right now.
Well,
instead of celebrating somebody like Bill Gates, who, and I know he stole some technology and everything else, but, you know, he put together a company that basically allows everybody in the world to be more productive.
I don't disagree with that.
You know, and what is he doing with? And the other part of it is, look what he's doing with his money. He's plowing it right back into trying to do some good.
Well, okay, but now the question is always, who gets what? I mean, we're neither one of us are saying Musk deserves minimum wage. I don't think either one of us are there.
No.
But then you have Eric, who hasn't been on the show for a while, saying the rise of this quote management class that thinks they deserve all the dough and they never really did much of anything. I mean, the current head of Pfizer didn't invent a drug. The guy's not Jonas Salk. I mean, all he does, you know, they buy other companies and get patents and charge a bunch of money. Okay, well, that's great. But now my question is, $56 billion for Musk. Okay, now I'm just looking at this. I just Googled this out. Does Tesla pay a dividend? Does it plan to? Tesla has never declared dividends on our common stock. We intend on retaining all future earnings to finance future growth and therefore do not anticipate paying any cash dividends in the foreseeable future. Now, the guy's number couldn't be $46 billion. And, I mean, the shareholders are the part that goes over the fence last here. I mean, if you look at a Commonwealth Edison, if you and I were to do some sort of a study saying what the top 500 people at Commonwealth Edison make versus a people in a competitive industry, and then look at their dividend, we could probably say, gee, if we cut that premium in half, the whole deal where you put your buddies on the board and then you're on their boards and all this other kind of stuff. I mean, does anybody really think after this period of time that with Tesla making virtually, I'm going to say all their money, damn near, on carbon credits, right? They never really made any dough that much.
They were able to show a profit when they really weren't cash flow positive.
So the idea is if you and I are investors, we never get a dime ever.
You're supposed to get. The way things work life cycle wise for a company, and Tesla is probably a good model for this, with the exception of, you know, all the politics and everything else around it. But if you create a new product, I want to do Microsoft instead of Tesla.
All right.
Because conceptually, I want to talk about how it should work, and I talk about this in the investment classes that I teach. That, you know, the undergrads, they can take on more risk. They don't need the income right now. They should be investing with companies that are trying to build up something substantial for the future.
Without a doubt.
And companies are doing that. They need to retain their earnings for growth. And that's great, because if everything is hitting on all cylinders and doing what should be done, the company is growing and it's showing up in a higher stock price. Then eventually, when the growth opportunities aren't there anymore, that's when a company should start returning capital to shareholders. So if Tesla believes that they can, you know, do 15 or 20% annual return on the equity that they're holding on to and not returning to shareholders, you know, the cash after everything else, more power to them, because that's a pretty darn good return. If Tesla's only, you know, doing 2 or 3% on that, they need to be returning some capital to shareholders because they're not efficiently using their capital.
Well, I mean, and by the way,
and Tesla's still in the growth phase, but they shouldn't say not pay a dividend in the foreseeable future, because they're going to end up being very similar to a traditional car company, probably if they're not now, within the next 5 to 10 years. And I know they do try to do other things with the battery technology, but when it comes down to it, they really are just they're just a car company, just a slightly different kind of car. And I think that's what you're seeing now with the transition in the share price. And when they become a traditional kind of car company and they roll out new models every 3 to 5 years, they should be paying a dividend.
Well,
the growth opportunities aren't there anymore.
When you teach this in class, you use the same. When I was in University of Chicago, I remember the. And it gets a little complicated because of the tax law, which I also want to ask you on that, my solution to that, of course, nobody's paying attention. The solution, the idea is, I mean, at least back then, the formula was, if you can make more on your money on your next project, which, by the way, you just said, then you think that your shareholders can. Now, back in those days, the shareholder could get, you know, 15% in the bank. You know, so you better have a pretty good project. But then the idea, I mean, some managers, no matter what, I mean, Microsoft clearly is way past that, or they wouldn't have how many bazillion dollars. Apple's the same thing. But obviously, the biggest sinner in that regard is Warren Buffett. No matter what it is, I can always do better than you. Okay. I guess that's pretty egotistical. But they also get, matter of fact, he bought one company. Normally, you know, he waits for companies to be in bad shape, and he swoops in and gets a price that you and I could not get. Okay, now that's why I want to be, if I'm a shareholder of Berkshire Hathaway, that's what I want. They had somebody on, a younger guy, a few years ago. Didn't he just plain flat out bought a company and was trading 60 and he paid like 80 or something. They interviewed this guy, and the guy says, why'd you sell all your Berkshire Hathaway stock? He goes, I don't need Warren Buffett to pay up $20 for stock. I can do that myself. You know, so and that's why he sold. Yeah. So it's a question, but now these guys get such massive ego that they never think that you can do as well as they can. Plus, the thing they got going for them is if they put out a dividend, there's a double taxation. So what do you think of my solution to that would be bring the taxation of corporations up to 35% like everybody else, and oh, by the way, you can deduct dividends. And then whatever the person gets the dividend, so if he's living out in the woods somewhere, he doesn't pay anything on it, or whatever his tax rate seems to be. Get rid of the double taxation. Remove that excuse from these guys.
You know what the problem is with that?
What?
You've brought that up before, and I was teaching the double taxation thing a couple of weeks ago, and it occurred, and then I was also teaching agency issues, which is where management doesn't do things that are in the best interest of shareholders. One of the potential agency issues is that most of the CEOs have a good portion of their net worth in the stock, and you would have to actually worry about them doing things that really what a CEO could end up doing is taking no salary whatsoever but giving himself more shares and then being able to tax-free pay themselves.
What do you mean tax-free? I'm saying the person who gets...
Well, no. So, let's say, Steve Jobs, he when he went back to Apple, I think he took a dollar salary, but they paid him a bunch in shares.
Right.
So, instead of, instead of me getting paid, a big-ass salary, the company rewards me with shares each year, and we pay I say, all right, let's pay a really exorbitant dividend to our shareholders because they get it for tax free. All of a sudden you've got a situation where CEOs could get paid and not have to pay any taxes.
Okay, what I'm saying is
I see what you're saying, but I always thought it sounded great, but then I was like, you know what?
Wait a minute, he's gotta pay the 35% tax on the dividend. He still has to pay.
Oh, you're saying that everybody, that the individuals have to get paid?
Sure.
Or the company pays it?
No, the company deducts it and the individuals pay it. But it's one time.
Oh, so the companies can deduct dividends that they pay to the...
Yeah, but if you get the dividend check, you got to pay.
Okay. I had always thought of that one as being, a way that... You know, a roundabout way that capital could...
No, it just would mean instead of him paying 35% on his salary, he's going to pay 35% on his dividend. What's the difference?
Not a whole lot in that case.
The issue with the dividends is the people with the stock options. Because if you give dividends, the price of the stock goes down and their stock options are worth nothing. That's the problem. The stock options, that's why they don't want to pay dividends.
That makes a lot of sense.
Once in a while I catch one. You know,
you got me. See, I'm rusty. I gotta get myself together.
One thing I have to ask you. I'm gonna use the term fixated, and and the investment environment today. Not the stocks and the values and all that stuff. I mean, we can argue about that forever. And by the way, the market always wins on that. But I'm trying to, because I've been a little concerned about some of the valuations on some of these stocks. And I have an awful lot of people that I know, and I think listeners, that are still, you know, trading 0% interest portfolios, where, you know, even if you're 112, you've got 99% of your stuff in high tech or something like that. You know, because, I mean, I think there's people that are like that, and I think it's an imbalance. It's a traditional imbalance. It's not me saying that, but virtually every money manager back 100 years would say, whoa, what are you doing? Yet that's what people are doing. And I went back to when I started, Russell. I mean, everybody else has heard this, but you deserve a story here. And I started in, like I say, December of 80 or January of 81, somewhere in there. And it looked to me like the Dow was about 800. But the market was pretty darn low, right? I mean the companies that were still around were paying 10, 12, 14% dividend. Somehow they had managed to hang through the Armageddon of... And the market, it was the same price as it was in 1969. So nobody had made a dime from 69. I mean, there were times when it was up and times it was down, but basically if you timed it, I guess you made some dough, but timing is always tough. So the interest rates, the CD rates, actually started to come down in early 81 and maybe even late 80. And they made their way down from 16 and a quarter to like 12 and a quarter. So pretty substantial, but still pretty high. I mean, for God's sake, if Grandma Russell or Grandma Tom were to put her money in there 12% back in 1980 and compound it to today, I mean, for God's sake, that's a lot of dough, right?
I mean, if I could do that right now and I'm retiring in 15 years, I would sell every stock I have and lock that stuff.
Even if it was $100, you got a bunch. So the mentality was such that even though the handwriting was sort of on the wall that there was going to be somewhat of a change, it didn't matter. I mean, you could walk into a party with your pinky up drinking your wine and go, I'm going to go find my mutual fund guy and I'm going to cash in my CD. Literally, they would have cut you off at the bar, if not flipped you out the front door. I mean, it would have been so insane for anybody to do that. I didn't know anybody who owned any stocks, unless they worked for a company. But then again, it was 18, 20 months before it sort of caught hold. But it was a mentality. It wasn't a value thing. And now, right now, rates have really gone up. It's almost the exact same time frame, 18 months, 2 years, where rates have gone from 0.5% to 5.5%, yet the market is up 19, 20, 25%. It's the exact flip image of the 80s. It's like, it doesn't matter. I mean, today, you look at the market's up again. I'm going to say, Russell, on any big manager's desk, and we don't do mutual fund stuff, but if we were tied into people's 401k, at 2 o'clock this afternoon, and that doesn't work this way, but checks are like raining down on my desk. Just put it to work. Doesn't matter what. I mean, and you couldn't get people out of these 401ks now that have made so much money in the last 10 years. You can't get them out with a crowbar. You can't say, even guys that'll tell you, oh yeah, the market's changing, but it's okay if it goes down a little bit for a while, it'll go right back up. I mean, there's no thought of anything happening like this happened in our lifetime a few times. And I'm certainly not giving anybody investment advice they bail out of the market. I'm saying at some point here, depending on your age and your stuff, 10-20% and maybe a T-bill, maybe some protection on some of this stuff. I mean, just something here. And nobody wants any part of any of it. But it's exactly the same mentality as it was in 82. And all of a sudden it changed. Now then, the change was to the good. Interest rates went down, the market started going up. That was a good thing. This time, if there's a return, Russell, I got Microsoft. I got it down here someplace. I have, you know, the stock you're liking, and by the way, I like it too. They managed to get away with their share price is in terms of times revenue.
No, not right now.
13.4. that is incredible for a company that size.
For a company that size that is so big, it's going to companies reach a point where they're so big, it's going to be very difficult to grow much faster than the economy, and that's one of them right there. Unless they come up with, and they can come up with some super new invention, but it still might not necessarily move the needle in a company of that size.
Well, in 2000, I went back and looked at a bunch of stuff then, because I was obviously trading then. It was not like 1981. All those stocks like Cisco, Oracle, and all those things, once they got above 10 times revenue,
they'd stall out. I totally remember that.
I can remember you'd buy
Microsoft at about, or I'm sorry, you'd buy Intel at about 6 times revenue, and you'd sell it at about 9 or 10 times revenue. You could just trade in and out of it. It was like a really nice, almost 45 degree angle opportunity where you could do even better, because it, you know, that they seemed to downgrade it at a certain point and upgrade it at a certain point. And then in the late 90s, we reached a point where you'd be really upset if you'd sold it at, you know, the 10 times revenue.
Yeah, well, and I've got,
because it just kept going.
What I've got, you know, like Intuit is 15 times revenue. They do taxes, for God's sake.
Yeah.
And I've got,
no, they're a technology company.
Yeah, well, they do taxes. But I mean, I got Nvidia at 13.7. Now they're growing like a weed, so that one might be okay.
I think Nvidia could still grow into their. Believe it or not, I think their valuation may be justified.
Actually, I've got those guys at 26 times revenue. But I'm saying
I'll tell you the problem. You want to hear the long term problem with Nvidia is the same as the long term problem with electric cars. That the chips that they make, which do the sort of AI type of processing, and they say that a search on, you know, an AI search takes 10 times as much power as a non-AI search. There may reach a threshold where there's nothing to do with these chips because you can't power them. Elon Musk said aren't they stockpiling the NVIDIA chips because there's not a way to return them, and there's nothing they can do with the ones that they've ordered right now?
Well, that's what I'm... he's shifting them over to X. Yeah. But what do you make... I mean, these are just danger signs. It doesn't mean anything.
They most definitely... But NVIDIA will look back on...
48% and, of their business is 4 companies.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I've heard, we've had several guests tell me, and I've obviously read about it, the power drain for this AI. You ever heard anybody, maybe Carl or Kevin, but maybe you, why? Well, I mean, what is the power drain come from? Is it from they're searching so much data, or where does the power drain come from?
And why? It's just a much more complex system that you know. If you use a Google search, it's just kind of going out there and basically pinging a bunch of places and it tells you, you know, where the best place after you get past the ads tells you where you might want to go look for something that you're searching. For AI, it is doing some of that, but it is also internally going through a vast amount of information to possibly give you the best answer.
We're going to have to go to break here, but I mean, every time, that's why I love having you on. Every time you give me an answer, I give you another question. How does AI, I mean, if you were to, let's say, give it a question about Chicago history or something, how does AI gain access to, like, you know, the Tribune archives or the Sun-Times archives?
It's read all of them.
But I mean, do they get granted access to all this stuff, or can they, do they worm their way? I mean, I have no idea.
All those kind of articles and everything that you're talking about, you know, typically if you Google, you know, if one of the things drives me nuts when I'm Googling, you know, to look for articles on something is the things behind paywalls. You know, most of the historical, you know, Tribune articles, et cetera, are in databases now that, you know, in the academic world we have access to. So they're using databases like that. So, yeah, that's where they're getting that information.
Because I'm
and they're able to, you know, in an AI, I say they, I'm personifying a computer now, but it's able to, you know, go through all that information and for lack of a better way to do it, start to build a knowledge database. But tapping into the vast amount of information as opposed to, you know, just going out and pinging a few websites, that just takes a lot more power.
But the data itself, and we definitely have to go to break, the data itself, that's not part of the quote AI experience. They're accessing other people's huge troughs of data.
Yeah, it's accessing all the other information, compiling it, and trying to come up with a logical answer.
But every time, I guess I'm not as smart as AI. Yeah. I mean, I one time we talked about college education, the cost one. When this is a couple years ago, Russell. I don't know if you remember, but
I remember that.
I found a site. I don't know. I think it might be done by the colleges, and it was the most incredible thing. You could go back at least to 2000. Every single college in the country, every single one, even junior colleges, in-state tuition, out-of-state tuition, room and board, how many kids go there. It was one of the most incredible sites I've ever been at. Now, if you can find it, I think it's a pay site. Now, how does?
Oh, I'm sure it probably is.
So how does AI get in there?
AI would use the free database part.
Yeah, but there isn't much there.
Yeah. Well, you know, you've got to assume if Google is running the AI, you know, if you're talking about Google's AI, that they have access to, you know, behind all the pay site stuff because they probably help run it.
Okay, well, that makes sense. S&P futures up 15, yeah. NASDAQ futures up 97. Be right back with Russell and Mr. John Flanagan.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you! Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now.
Low and OPEC stocks and jacks. I'm Tomorrow Andrew on the board. SP futures up 15. NASDAQ futures up an even 100. Dow futures up 74 again. Big movers, CrowdStrike up 36.42. The straddle was 38. So I guess we're right where people thought it was going to be. A move, and it's to the upside. We have HPE is up 285. That's almost 17%. That's a big move. Seems like whatever the earnings, most of them are to the upside, and they're pretty good. I would say the stock movement is pretty good over in Europe.
We've got the DAX up 186. That's a 1%. They were down almost that much yesterday. FTSE up 30. Well, yesterday morning. I think they came back in the afternoon. FTSE up 30.4%. CAC around up 77. That's a full 1%. So FTSE's the laggard there. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei down 347. It's 0.9%. Hang Seng down 19.1%. Shanghai down 25.8%. So that's a pretty good move in the Shanghai. 3,065. Make sure we ask Russell what's going on over there. Yesterday, again, down during the day, but we rally on the close. We've been doing every single day. Dow was up 140. S&P up 8. NASDAQ up 28. So another up day. Bonds down 1 basis point. It's one of the reasons the bonds have been leaking, or the 10-year rate's been leaking down here a little bit, 4.32. The Bund down 2 basis points, 2.52. 10-year Japan, they're down to 1.008, so they're in danger of going under 1% again, which I didn't think I was going to see. Oil up 38 cents, but still low, 73.63. Brent up 39 cents, 77.91. Natural gas up 7 cents, 2.66. RBOB down another penny, 2.33. Gold, which has been kind of languishing here in the middle, it actually got a little bit of a rally today, up 8.80, 23.56. It's been in its mid-2300s now for a little while. Silver up a dime, 29.70, but still not over to 30 like it was. Copper unchanged, 4.54. U.S. dollar, 108.7, right there it's been against the euro. And guess what? The pound, same way, 127.7. So it has been very much movement there. Bitcoin up 437, back over 70,000, 70,835. Andrew, we got for us traffic, weather, sports.
All right, it is 7:41 here in Chicago on June 5th. It's a little bit of sports today. We had our two favorite teams here in Chicago play against each other last night, and the Cubs won over the White Sox 7-6. Over for Chicago weather, it is currently 72 degrees. It's going to stay pretty warm throughout the day. We're going to have a high of 79. We're going to have some occasional rain through the morning, but that's going to let up in a few hours and be some good sun and clouds for the rest of the day. Over in Phoenix, they are keeping things pretty warm as well. Currently at 80 degrees, but that's going to go up to about 108, and they're going to have about sunny skies all day. Finally, for Chicago traffic, things are pretty heavy in the red if you're on the inbound. No major accidents to report on the inbound expressways. We have a little bit of a big scattering of accidents all around the Tri-State Tollway. If you're going on the northbound tollway near, it looks about, let's see, Illinois Route 171, there's some heavy delays over there, and again, accidents all about. So, that is all I got. Back to you, Chief.
We have Mr. Flanagan as well.
Good morning.
Hey, John. And a couple more technical questions from Russell, and maybe you can ask more questions that people would more care about. So do you think they found the body on the Ryan yet this morning? Did you guys hear that story?
They found a body on the Ryan?
Well, no, some guy in a Tesla.
I saw a video a couple of days ago, some guy riding one of the divvy bikes on the Ryan, and a cop, you know, cuts him off and tackles him off the divvy bike.
Really?
So I would not be surprised at anything.
Well, some this morning.
You know what happened? You know what they call finding a body on the Ryan in Chicago? A Tuesday.
Yes. Well, this morning, some guy in a Tesla, evidently they've got cameras in the Tesla, whacks a pedestrian in the express lanes. The windshield's busted. The guy pulls over, calls 911. They can't find the guy.
You know, there's a lot of weird stuff going on in the world.
And I'm like hoping that.
Know, I mean, beyond the politics, like stuff, you know, UFOs all over the place. You just got to wonder what's really going on, man.
Well, if you were on some sane planet, you'd love to fly down here and fly around and just watch what's going on and laugh at it, wouldn't you?
We are a reality show.
Yes,
years ago, South Park did an episode about how Earth was some big aliens reality show.
That's probably
what happens
not...
when you put a bunch of species in a war, famine. Let's watch.
Oh God!
So, yeah, we're just a big reality show.
Hey, I have a technical question, and then we'll let John ask some stuff. When all this University of Chicago, when I was there, was the first to have this center for what do they call it, Russell or John? It was a center for stock trading history, where they went all the way.
Yeah, the Center for Research and Security Prices.
Right, and they went all the way back to like as far as they could in the Dow in the 1890s, and
every single uptick, downtick, I mean, you named it, was all there. And now a lot of schools have it, so I'm assuming Indiana has something similar to that. My question is, does that extend to the off-hours trading? I mean, like the stuff like GameStop, you know what I mean? In other words, I guess they're all kind of the same. Would Indiana's or Chicago's or whoever it is, Notre Dame's got one too now, I think, Jen. They were all proud of it the last time I talked to somebody down there. Now, does that cover the off-hours trading, or is that just kind of a forgotten stuff?
You can segment it. I haven't used the University of Chicago database. I use a different one. But there is a way where I can say include or don't include extended hours, and there's also a way I could break out extended hours trading versus regular session trading. So the answer is yes, they have the data. You can exclude it or exclude it.
So somehow the I'll use the term shenanigans that was going on in GameStop the other night, that's tracked somewhere, even though it's at 8 different black pools.
I'm physically in my family room right now. I could go up to my home office and get that data for you right now.
Okay, so it is there. It's not.
Yeah. Yeah, I got it. You know, DJT got hit when they said guilty, and then rebounded right back. And I pulled that data for something that I was trying to demonstrate in a class. So yeah, I know I can do that.
So the dark pool places, you know, just the show me exchanges and stuff, they still have data requirements to the extent where they have to at least keep track of this.
Everybody has to report their data. I've forgotten what the name of that entity is, but everybody has to. Anybody that's trading, anybody that's offering one of those venues, those ECNs, the electronic communication networks that you can trade through, they have to report their data to, and I forgot what entity it is, but they all report their trading data to the same entity, and that's where we get the compiled price action in the stock from day to day.
All right, Jen, get me off this technical stuff because I talked to Russell too much about that. Why don't you ask him some real questions that people care about?
Let's my new dog's name is Spot. No, go ahead.
Well,
we already covered the dogs.
Well, when we were talking about, you know, AI before and databases and paywalls and such, it makes me think about all of the problems that exist within the range of databases, say just for newspapers. Just to take one example of things that can be compiled and it can be searchable and shared and so on. But my experience in using these for various research projects is that they all have their strengths and they all have their weaknesses.
Yep.
None of them have any kind of solution, I think, to the bigger problems. One of the problems that I see is that how newspapers themselves have changed and how things that used to be covered in newspapers are covered in particular ways or with particular regularity has stopped. And as a result, even if you have a very secure and accurate and searchable database of newspapers going forward, the newspapers themselves have declined so much in value for what they yield, even if you can search them and find what you're looking for, that what you get it's not very usable data because it's nothing like the data that used to exist.
And they kind of repeat each other in a way that some things become fact and you're like, when did that become a fact? And I'll give you a funny example. You'll hear the PCE indicator, the personal consumption expenditures. And you'll hear that cited in news articles as the Fed's favorite inflation indicator.
You hear it all day long.
I don't know where that idea came from. I think it's something that one time one of the Fed governors may have said, well, PCE is giving us a better indication of inflation these days. And now all of a sudden it's expanded to that. And I think that's a danger, just to go along with what you just said, I think that's a danger of the AI thing is, you know, I'll give you a kind of a funny example around AI. I had a friend that did this. I'm not so egotistical, I did this myself. But if you go into an AI database and you ask, who am I, who is Russell Rhodes, and you spell my name correctly, it comes back with a really nice thing about what I had done at SIBO and the books I've written and a few other things. And I can tell where it's getting the information. It's getting the information from the different bios that have shown up at the different places that I've worked. And then there's a newer one on X. And I did the same thing just for the heck of it to see how that one worked. And it had my background intertwined with a news anchor in Tampa, Florida, who's about the same age as me, who spells his name differently. Now, that can be a little bit disconcerting. I mean, it kind of mixed in. Apparently, I've also won a regional Emmy Award.
Hey, good for you.
According to that one.
Good for you.
Well, but this can become a problem as well. You know, what if there's some negative misinformation about me out there? Does that suddenly start to morph into fact because AI can't differentiate between me and a news anchor down in Tampa, Florida, who actually spells his name differently as well? Even in the X, when you ask X who Russell Rhodes is, it's like award-winning news anchor, also considered an expert in volatility and VIX. It's really kind of funny.
I hope it says guest on Stocks and Jacks.
Yeah. You know, you don't have me on your website, so no, it doesn't.
Oh, so what if it were to say gold medalist in like curling or something?
It's that kind of stuff. And if AI is drawing from things that are in newspapers, which are go to Google News sometime and look up a topic, you're going to find six or seven articles in six or seven different newspapers that almost say the exact same thing because they all repeat each other. Well, that's getting accentuated with AI. So,
I've noticed too.
Here's the big negative: the only other guy in his 50s in the Chicago area that spells his name the same as I do is he's a registered sex offender down in the south suburbs.
Oh, that's not good.
Now, what the fuck happened? I'm sorry. What happens when that gets mixed in with me?
That's a problem.
That's a real problem. So, and how do I go correcting that? It hasn't happened, but what happens if it does?
Do you remember the lady who was a market maker for me, Sharon King, for a while?
Yeah.
Real nice black lady. Actually, she might have been the first black lady market maker on the floor. There were a lot of brokers. So she goes to apply for the Board of Trade, and evidently there was a Sharon King who was a hookah. And had a rap sheet from here to the street, and the guys at the Board of Trade, they go, which ones of these are yours? She's like,
oh yeah,
like none of them. Like none of the guys, none of them. There had to be 30 arrests. And then she goes, that's a different Sharon King, for God's sake.
Yeah,
but there's only one way you spell King, so there's no way she was getting out of it. It is going to be interesting. What if they said you were Olympic gold medalist in curling? Would you take that off?
Heck no. That's the other part of it. I'm not correcting that Emmy Award stuff.
God.
But if I start to get mixed up with this guy down, this creepy freaking guy down on the south side,
that would not be good.
I hope that never happens.
Well, you spell yours like a Rhodes Scour, right?
No, it's the other way.
Okay.
R-H-O-A-D-S.
Right.
Yeah. And the guy down in Tampa spells it R-H-O-D-E-S. And every once in a while, it's funny because every once in a while, people will try to link me or link me something on Twitter/X, and they'll link that guy instead.
John, would you mind if I break in and ask, whoever wins the election, no matter who it is, the numbers somewhat are... The numbers don't lie, do they? Someplace next February, May, June, somebody's got to do something about this federal deficit. What do you see happening?
Oh, goodness gracious. I almost feel like it's going to we're going to have some sort of disaster for that to be taken care of.
Well, I mean,
it's such an imperceptible extreme. They talk about, I love the whole John Kerry thing where a few billion here, a few billion there, you're talking about real money. That's real money, man. What's going to get us back on track, and I said this a while back, it's going to take, we're going to have to inflate our way out of it.
Well, we're sort of doing that, or have done it.
We are doing that, and we're basically we've regressed, not just through the rhetoric and in people weaponizing the legal system against each other, and I'm saying both sides here are responsible for all of this. And we're starting, and everybody says we're starting to look like a banana republic. Wait until it comes a day of reckoning on the deficit that we're racking up. I was just telling my wife right before we started, I was downtown yesterday and I stopped in and saw you and said, I want to come back. But I went to your favorite watering hole and got a burger and a couple of Diet Cokes. And after the tip, it was $30.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And my haircut downtown was 60.
Jeez.
Yeah, I just hear in the background, my wife just popped up and said, really? Yeah. No, so I spent $100 on a burger, two Diet Cokes, and a haircut yesterday.
Careful she doesn't cut your budget and you're over at Great Clips with Flanagan.
Well, that's what she just said. I'm gonna have to check your budget.
Well, no, don't ask her how much
my allowance.
Don't ask her how much she pays for hers. That's, you can't ask that.
I would never ask.
No, I would
that.
Never either. That's it. Guys just don't go there.
My point is, we I can't come on without us talking about inflation and how what the official numbers are and what's really going on are two completely different things. But yeah, that's what's gonna get the deficit under control. We're gonna have a huge bout of inflation, and the deficit will become a smaller part of GDP because of inflation.
Well, that's scary though, because I think we're at the point where
it's very scary, and nobody's going to like that. And and who do you elect to fix that? Well, it used to be, you would think of the Republicans as the ones that are a little bit more financially conservative, but that's just not the case anymore. Neither side does a good job of managing the money.
Well, Jan and I were privy. We had our reunion this weekend, and we were privy. I think you were there when I was talking to Jan Flynn, Flanny, and he was talking about the inflation in the stores and that kind of stuff. And I said, Jan, you can't look beyond that. I mean, that's where the people on TV are giving you. It's always gas. It's always food, chicken, and all. And don't get me wrong, that's not important, but most of the population, me included. Because I haven't had these things happen to me yet. When I say yet, someday it'll happen to somebody. I haven't needed a new roof. I fortunately have not had an emergency room experience. My transmission has not gone in my truck. That stuff like double what it was two, 3 years ago.
And those are the sort of things that you don't plan for, that aren't in your budget, that screw up, and basically screw up your personal finances.
Yeah.
For several years into the future, because you gotta put it. If my car gets totaled and it's completely my fault, I talk about my younger sister down in Memphis. She totaled her car about a month ago or so. And
she okay?
She's fine. She's just an idiot. She did something kind of stupid, is how I should have said that. But I'm her landlord. And she's fortunate that her landlord said, well, until you get, get yourself back on track with the car and everything else, just don't worry about paying me rent for the next few months.
Well, that was nice of him.
Most people don't have that luxury.
Well, I mean,
that's why you'll have, that's why you'll have people moving back home with their parents. That's why you have lots of things like that going on.
Well, Jan and I were talking this weekend, and what do we say, Janet? Unfortunately, the reason why you're here is to help other people get through life. I mean, it's right.
And I don't mind that at all.
No, it's. I mean, obviously, you're doing that. But I mean, a lot of, even credit card bills. Most of them, when people have this big balance, and you say, God, what'd you do? Go out and buy a bunch of furniture? They'll go, no, I was in the emergency room or something.
That's exactly what I was thinking of. Is, you said if your transmission falls out on your truck or anything. You needed to get to and from work, So you're going to have to put that on a credit card because you got to pay for it somehow. And, that ain't cheap. And you end up paying. What ends up happening is, let's just say it's $2,000 for the new transmission or whatever. In reality, you end up paying about $3,500 for it.
I mean, I'm going to take the over on that. Well, Dan Janitas, they hit him up. What did they hit him up for, Jen? And his Mercedes, 25?
Yeah.
Did he get it from Germany or something?
Yeah.
But we had a...
Yeah, he had a special order it from Germany.
Yeah, yeah. This was during COVID. Oh, gosh. And Audrey just got herself a car. Now, Audrey, needs a nice car because she drives people around all the time. So she got one like a year old off lease. Real nice. I mean, but still, it was, pretty freaking expensive. And the guy who was sold it to her is a friend of her cousin's, a nice guy. And he's telling me, he goes, here's one for your show. He goes, we now have a loan officer for repairs, not just new cars. They go, you've got to be bleeping me. He goes, no, these repairs, people can't afford the repairs. We got a loan officer for repairs.
Mm-hmm.
Would you ever have guessed that?
No.
I mean, it's...
No, I mean, it's just,
Yeah, I mean, especially if you have any kind of a, I mean, John's a smart one. What do you just rent? You just rent them, right, John, when you want one?
Yeah. Well, that's become so pricey that I have to pick and choose when I do it for how long.
Well, why don't you go out and pay like $100,000 for a car and park it on the street and have people steal the converter and run into it and stuff?
I'll just put multiple converters in it. That's
all. Yeah. The thing with cars is the thing with housing is it's always been rent versus own.
Yeah.
With the convenience of Uber, I wonder if it's if there's a financial decision in there with respect to renting versus owning, or it's owning versus renting and Ubering for the short trips.
John, why don't you ask you and Nancy were having a conversation the other day because we can run over a couple minutes because we started a few minutes late.
Yep.
John, you and Nancy were talking about the. Nancy's been saying that she can get people into houses now, even with the newer, with the higher rates, cheaper than the rent in some areas. Yet,
yeah.
And John, you were quizzing her about people don't have the down payment; they don't qualify. What did you guys decide on that? And ask Russell what his opinion is, if you don't mind.
United Wholesale Mortgage, whatever, came up with this 0% down formula for first-time home buyers, and they would lend you up to $15,000 on a second mortgage for your down payment. So pretty much you're in the hole from the get-go, and you don't have enough savings to, qualify for a home purchase. But it looks like the lenders are in such desperate shape that they're trying to do anything possible to get deals started. And even if it looks like a predatory loan scheme, by taking advantage of people who are ill-positioned to make this thing work, the lenders are willing to try it because they're so desperate for customers. And this is a sign to me of something that's tapped out or maxed out, that there aren't enough people who qualify as, a traditional, borrower with 10 to 20% down already in the bank account. So they're going after people who clearly would not be considered, the customers you would want to attract in better times.
Well, what?
So we just time traveled to 2005, didn't we?
Right, right.
Well, exactly what. And actually, I know someone who is basically going through a divorce, and they're going to end up having to completely take over their house, which means they're going to have to get a new mortgage, and it's going to be a stretch, but I think they're going to be able to do it. But and this person's pretty financially knowledgeable. They tried all kinds of gimmicky type things, and they the buyer here knew better than to do an interest only loan for the next 3 years or something like that, and then maybe refinance. But everybody that they'd reached out to try to get an idea of what the impact's going to be if they take over the house and have to take on a mortgage by themselves instead of the joint mortgage they have right now, it was like five. Ridiculous 2005 type things thrown out immediately. So, when does that one catch up with us?
Well, I'm gonna
catches up with us with the next bout of inflation that we'll get in the next year or two.
Well, Russell, you guys are pushing towards the 2005 thing, and I'm sure as hell not going to disagree. However, I will mention that you two guys are the geniuses on real estate. How else can you do it? Because what Nancy's been talking about, really, she's been on a show for a while, is I'll just throw these numbers out there. I wish she was here, but she's going to say that if you were a younger couple and you wanted to buy a whatever, not a great house, someplace, not a great house, a nice house, but in Tinley, someplace, some nice area, whatever. I'm not lobbing people to go to Tinley, but you could get in there with a maybe a 10% down payment of say it's $2,800 a month, all in, taxes and
everything. Yeah.
Well, the rents are like four, because that's why BlackRock and all these other people are buying these single family homes. Because now the question is, how do you bridge the gap? I mean, $1,200 rent premium is kind of a lot, or $1,000. So people are going to act to close that gap, right? I mean, why wouldn't they? I mean, that's what people do economically, correct? I remember when people bought houses back in the 80s, hell, you lent the buyer the down payment if you were the seller. I mean, people did whatever they had to do to make up for the screwiness of the economy. Well, somehow, some way, the rents aren't gonna be $1,000 more a month, or $800 or $1,200 more than a person who bought it. Somehow that gap's gonna close. I mean, without going back to 2005, how else can we do it, I guess, was the question.
Well, eventually, eventually everything has to kind of fall back in line where an average person can afford to get a traditional mortgage and buy a home. But that's just becoming more and more impossible unless salaries keep pace with the increased prices and the increased cost with the increased interest rates. So I guess what will end up having to happen is interest rates will have to come down.
Or home prices, maybe.
You're gonna have to, if you can't get anybody into a mortgage and you're a mortgage company, you're gonna have to figure out a way to offer a lower interest rate on the mortgage and to remain competitive, which is what they're effectively doing if they're offering all kinds of, other incentives.
Right.
Well, Jen,
there's other things like homeowners insurance that going in the opposite direction now, and that's that may make it possible for you to juggle the numbers a little better every month, but it's still putting homes outside the reach of people who have any kind of sense of financial planning over the next 18 months or 5 years. Will we ever be as well off in this place as we are today, and will we be better off looking at anything else where our costs aren't going to dramatically increase for no payback to us? I mean, the insurance stuff, I think, has really started to take a toll on people's interest in owning homes.
Well, John, has it hit here yet? Or, obviously it's a massive Florida problem.
Well, my homeowner's insurance bill here, I think, is close to having doubled in the last 3 years.
Really?
And this, we have no claims filed, nothing other than the fact that I think that there's lots of people who are availing themselves of insurance now to get anything done, to get all the help they can, because costs have just skyrocketed. The insurance companies feel that too.
Well, in the Orland area where they've had a couple of hailstorms, tell you what, these insurance companies are putting on a boatload of $90,000 roofs.
Yeah.
And
I'm sure they are.
Well,
and those roofs would have cost what, $10,000-$20,000? Not that long.
The shake roof's probably a little more, but yeah, it's tripled or doubled for sure. Last question, guys, because I talked to you guys all day. the home market again. This is I'm asking you questions from the interesting parts on Monday when John and Audrey and Nancy talk, and I pretty much try and shut up as best I can. The prices of the houses seem, I use the term fake. That's a horrible term, but I'll use the term fake because Nancy says you've got 40% of people that have paid for their homes and don't really want to take on a mortgage, although they do trade against other homes if they want to go up and down in size. 38% of the people have a mortgage under 3.25. So you really only have about 20% of the homes in play. So that's somewhat of a fake market to why the prices are, in my opinion, why the prices are staying as high as they can.
Yes.
But what would it take, Russell, in your economic opinion? How many houses would have to hit the market in an area like Orland, Tinley, Crestwood? You know, 200 houses if everybody got laid off, and all of a sudden, is this stuff teetering? I mean, is it?
It is. It's teetering. I live near a suburb out here called Hinsdale. We border it. My wife grew up in Hinsdale, and she commented that there's a ridiculous amount of overpriced homes up for sale, in Hinsdale right now. And this is when houses usually come up for sale. Everybody does things around the school year. You want to sell your house over the summer, and somebody else would like to buy your house over the summer so they can get their kids into the next school. But it looks like the supply is looking really ridiculous. And then I just saw a headline in passing when I was walking through the Board of Trade building yesterday that apparently apartment construction has come to a halt. So the supply demand part, which takes a long time in real estate, maybe we're going to see a less supply, so some demand catches up with it.
What's the catalyst? Is there going to be one? I mean, because right now we talked about earlier. Again, I promise, last question. We talked earlier about when you reach a level like the lady who just bought a big chunk of the Mark Cuban's team, and she sold a whole bunch of stock at a big number, and like $2 billion worth, and bought 50% of or 45% of a basketball team. Well, mm-hmm. that's not even, I can't even say this without somewhat political, it's not even real money to her. It's play money. I mean, it's not play money. The old man invested $20 million, and now it's worth $5 billion. Okay, I'll take $2 billion and I'll put it in a lot of the places, the people at Audrey.
I'll buy me a basketball team.
Yeah, the people at Audrey are trading a lot of houses, and she's still pretty busy. Well, because she's good at it. But you'll see somebody who bought a bungalow in Mount Greenwood or something for 80, and now it's 20 years later, and they sell it for, 370 or something. So they'll mm-hmm. go buy a townhouse for, 360 or something, a nice townhouse. It's not, I mean, the chances of those people, which is another awful term, whether you're a fireman, policeman, of just walking in and plunking down money for a house that's 400 grand. But once it's one place or another, it's like an option trade. I mean, I don't care what I pay for this one if I could sell the other one here. If the spread's 20 cents, I don't care what the individual prices are. There's like that part of that's what's going on, right, Jan? I mean, in some of those areas?
Yeah.
And that's kind of weird.
It's going to be, whatever's going to free this up, or whatever the catalyst is, it's going to be a disruption that I don't think too many people want to see happen. People are stuck now. They're stuck in their jobs. They're stuck in their earning power. They're stuck in their homes. They're stuck in their neighborhoods. They feel like their options for making plans elsewhere are much narrower and more constricted and more expensive than they ever were before. And people are just kind of like waiting for something to happen. But that isn't a good climate, Tom, because what it would mean is a collapse in prices or catastrophic deflation. And I don't think anybody wants to go through that. But it seems to me about the only thing now that would make the kind of adjustment that people want to have happen. It's not going to happen gradually.
Well, give me your percentage chance. The solution, the right solution, is for somewhat prices to stay even for 2 or 3 years and everybody get a 5 or 6 raise per year, 5 or 6%. Any chance of that happening?
No.
Don't all say yes at once.
No, I was trying to come put a number, but I just say that's just I can't see how that was going to happen.
Well, it better, because I don't want
to. I could open another can of worms here and say, we've got a couple million people coming into the country each year. What are we gonna? Where are we gonna put them?
Well, I'll tell you,
that's a whole different discussion.
Well, I'll tell you one thing: you can come downtown someday and we'll take the Rock Island south. We'll have Jack come with us. Maybe we'll grab a six-pack. You can have a Diet Coke. There's nothing but room on the south side. The place, the people are gone, Russell. They're gone.
They moved across the border to Indiana.
Wherever they went, they're gone. I mean,
no, I know two or three people from the south. I know three people from the south suburbs that pretty close to where you grew up, who haven't changed jobs, haven't changed anything else, but they've moved their family to Indiana.
Yeah,
and well, they commute in. And
I remember what Carl said on Showtemp. Why did all those people leave in the first place? And it's going to be take a transformation of those neighborhoods to attract people. You can dump people in lots of places or build shelters and house them there, but that isn't what you want. That isn't the solution to anything.
Well, people will live in hell if they have a job making a lot of money. I mean, people live in New York, right? Right, Russell? I mean,
yeah.
I mean, people pay 10 grand a month for an apartment in a month if you're making 20 grand, right? But if you're not, you're not hanging. Anyway, guys, thank you very much. Russell, great to have you back, buddy.
Yeah, great to have you back. It's so good to hear you.
Thanks. SP Futures up 22, NASDAQ Futures up 135. Yippee! Your rally will be, which is good. I mean, some of my stocks are up for my people. That's good. Gold is up. I got some of that. Looks like a good day. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.